President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. We do not have a special guest again this evening. I'm going to continue along the path that I've been discussing over the past couple of weeks. We will have Jim Murray with us tomorrow, so those of you who are getting tired of listening to me speak nonstop for an hour, we'll have a guest, and we're going to tackle a very interesting and innovative topic tomorrow. So you want to be sure to tune in for tomorrow night's show. Lots of news, and to tell you the truth, I really don't care to go there. We are being inundated with news, and I may discuss that a bit during the talk in the context of what is important and where we should be focusing our attention and how we should be focusing our attention. And I'll get into that in a moment. That considered, I've got a couple of stories that I'd like to share with you. These came by way of email from a very close friend, and I thought I would share them because both of these stories actually reveal quite a bit about character of a true American and character of someone that really loves their country. Harry Truman after the presidency. Harry Truman from Missouri was a different kind of president. He probably made as many important decisions regarding our nation's history as any of the other 42 presidents. However, a measure of his greatness may rest on what he did after he left the White House. Historians have written that the only asset he had when he died was the house he lived in, which was in Independence, Missouri. On top of that, his wife inherited the house from her mother. When he retired from office in 1952, his income was a U.S. Army pension reported to have been $13,507.72 a year. Congress, noting that he was paying for his stamps and personally licking them, granted him an allowance and later a retroactive pension of $25,000 per year. After President Eisenhower was inaugurated, Harry and Bess drove home to Missouri by themselves. There were no Secret Service following them. When offered corporate positions at large salaries, he declined, stating, "You don't want me, you want the office of the president, and that doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the American people, and it's not for sale." Even later, on May 6, 1971, when Congress was preparing to award him the Medal of Honor on his 87th birthday, he refused to accept it, writing, "I don't consider that I have done anything which should be the reason for any award, congressional or otherwise." He never owned his own home, and as a president, he paid for all of his own travel expenses and food. Modern politicians have found a new level of success in cashing in on the presidency, resulting in untold wealth. Today, many in Congress also have found a way to become quite wealthy while enjoying the fruits of their offices. Political offices are now for sale. Good old Harry Truman was correct when he observed, "My choices early in life were either to be a piano player in a whorehouse or a politician. And to tell the truth, there's hardly any difference." Let that sink in for a moment. Being a piano player, I'd have to agree with him. Never had to do that route, though, but come close. If you've ever been in a nightclub, you know what I mean. Here's a story which comes from the Persian Gulf area, and it deals with a violation of Iranian airspace. In addition to communicating with the local air traffic control facility, all aircraft in the Persian Gulf, AOR, are required to give the Iranian Defense Radar, military, in other words, a 10-minute heads-up if they will be transiting Iranian airspace. This is a common procedure for commercial aircraft and involves giving them your call sign, transponder code, type of aircraft, and points of origin and destination. I heard this conversation on the VHF guard emergency frequency 121.5 megahertz while flying from Europe to Dubai. It's too good not to pass along. The conversation went something like this. Iranian air defense radar. Unknown aircraft at location unknown. You are in Iranian airspace. Identify yourself. Aircraft. This is a United States aircraft. I am in Iraqi airspace. Air defense radar. You are in Iranian airspace. If you do not depart our airspace, we will launch interceptor aircraft. Aircraft. This is a United States Marine Corps F-A-18 fighter. Send them up. I'll wait. Air defense radar. No response. Total silence. Kind of funny, isn't it? Well, moving on to tonight's topic, I, through the course of conversations and meditation and the issues that many people are bringing up nowadays, there's quite a bit of fear. Most of you in the listening audience will agree that if you yourself are not regularly in a state of fear, you know someone who is. Definitely when you share the particulars about a news item or a condition that you see, a problem that you see in the country, people are in denial. And their basic reason for that is they're in fear, even if they don't admit it. What their ignorance centers around may have everything to do with it, because people fear what they don't understand. Or they fear what they don't know. Or they fear what they haven't experienced. And if it hasn't touched them in a direct way, they really couldn't be bothered. We call that apathy. We call that denial, of course. Especially when you realize there is a problem and you refuse to address it. You refuse to attempt to solve it or refuse to connect with others who are attempting to solve a problem. That's denial. Denial comes in many shapes, many forms, many colors, and as such, so does fear. We've talked about fear on past shows, and if you consider what your fears are, and if they ever really manifest themselves, of course you can manifest things out of fear. And the result is usually more fear. So in an attempt to empower the listening audience and to help you cope with fear, I thought I would talk about a somewhat more pleasing, a somewhat more attractive topic, and in the context of fear, because if we don't address the issue of fear, we will miss out on the whole meaning of the other topic, and that's going to be the topic of love. I hear a lot of people talk about love, seems like all day long. I can tune into a variety of internet radio programs or shows and catch someone discussing some aspect of the topic, telling us that we must be centered in love, we must focus on love, we must be loving individuals, the greatest force in the universe is love, and all of those things are true, though seldom do we get a solution or a manual that goes along with love. In fact, those that profess to be experts on love, marriage counselors, probably have less than a 50% success ratio by just simple basic mathematics. They have a 50% chance of saving a marriage or having the marriage go down the tubes. So their efficacy as a therapist, as a listener, and as a counselor, and someone who has the ability to tune in to their clients and open those gateways to higher consciousness, may be successful or maybe not. And it all depends on their approach and their own understanding. There's a problem when we take instruction from others, and this includes yours truly, in respect to the listening audience. If you take instruction from me, I'm never asking you to believe what I say, but to test it yourself, to research it, to gather as much knowledge as you can, and put this knowledge to use. Just to have it and to hoard it away somewhere, or to tuck it away into your subconscious mind, is really worthless. It's practicality, or its practicability, is what we must focus on. Putting it into action, and every action, even whether it's of a negative or a positive consequence, is a positive action. Doing nothing is a negative action. And reacting to nothing is also a negative reaction, as well as reacting negatively to a positive action. Now, that sounds like a bunch of mumbo-jumbo, and maybe in a sense it is, because when we're talking about fear, we're talking about an illusion and our identification with that illusion. And if you consider that we allow something that is not real to become real and to dictate our actions or our inactions, it's bordering on insanity if it isn't insanity. A thinking, rational being would not give something that is not real the credibility that we give illusions, and yet we do it all the time. And we're presented with a never-ending stream of illusions. We know this from watching television. We know this from watching the movies. We can be given illusions in the newspapers, in the magazines, in photographs. The movies are a combination of all of those things. Even sound effects, visual effects we have now. We have computer-driven visual effects that cause us to accept that something might be real. At least they play upon our imagination with these ideas, with these scripts, with these stories, to get us to buy into illusion. So that when we see the real thing, such as 9/11, we figure, well, it's not a movie, so it must be real. It was on TV, on the news, so it must be real. Such is the nature of illusions and our lack of discernment, which we have talked about somewhat, and we'll be talking about a bit more tonight, is at the root of us not discerning when we have an illusion before us. We have illusions about our educational system. We have illusions about the political system, although many of us are waking up and realizing how corrupt it is. But when we consider our educational system in the same light, it's also very corrupt because we are being taught untruths, scientific untruths, literary untruths, and historical untruths, even untruths about science. We're not being told the truth about everything that exists in the scientific realms. But because we haven't been taught that, we assume that when we do hear or learn or find out about something that's in the scientific realm, it sounds too fantastic. Even though we will accept it in the context of a movie or of a TV show, we accept the possibility that those things could exist, yet when they actually exist in real life, we're in denial about it. Again, that's another form of insanity. Now, I don't intend to sound judgmental. I'm not being judgmental. I'm making observations and drawing conclusions about those observations. But they're by no means my own. And they change constantly because we are changing constantly. Anyway, most of us are. And our changes aren't always positive either. We go in the wrong direction. In fact, the very reason for the illusions and the very reason for the intentional creation of fear in the consciousness of the masses is designed to lower our vibration, to cause us to go backwards or downwards. In fact, I prefer using up and down instead of forward and backwards because forward and backwards ends up being a two-dimensional reality here. We're three-dimensional beings in the three-dimensional world traveling a two-dimensional pathway. And by going vertically, we now enable ourselves to expand into a three-dimensional reality where we might be able to experience our higher gifts, which definitely will allow us to go into a higher vibration. We, every day, make observations of things being lower or higher, and yet when we think of time or we think of progress, we always measure it from a point where we stand or sit to a point somewhere out in front of our noses or somewhere behind the back of our heads, or better yet, our rear ends. So when we perceive life on a day-to-day basis, to discern what we're seeing, to discern if we're seeing illusions or we're seeing truths, is of utmost importance. Our acceptance of illusions as the truth is where we err. And our refusal to act upon the truths that we do discern are also equally erroneous. It's self-defeating that we don't use the higher knowledge that we gain. Take the aspect of war. We have war after war after war sprouting out over the earth in the most recent history for the past 13,000 years at least, and there have been many wars long before that. But we have not been told the truth. We have been given an illusion about our history. Because for us to know that this is a regular thing wakes us up to that reality that someone must be orchestrating it. People don't just become born and violent because they're here. And what gives us the right to usurp the sovereignty and the freedom and the free will that our Creator gave us. So the compounding of fear, most of the time, is based upon what we don't know, what we haven't learned, or our refusal to accept the truth when we do discover it. The ultimate fear is the fear of death. And we know less about that, even though everybody who has been born will die, at least physically. We fear that experience because we fear losing the things we own. We fear leaving our family, leaving our friends, leaving our loved ones, as though we have ended our journey and there's no other aspect about creation that would permit us to continue to exist. That is a type of ignorance that causes us to fear death. We know little, or we remember little, about what we know inside about death. I can tell you from experience, there is no reason to fear death. There's a concern you should have, or you may have, or you know you have, regarding completion of your soul contract, or completion of some oath that you may have taken on some level to come to the earth and perform a specific duty or a specific goal. There's a reason why we are alive. If you've ever asked that question, why, and gotten an answer, you know what your reason is. And sometimes we change those reasons. We seek something that we love to do because we seek happiness. It's the nature of being alive anywhere in the universe. And happiness comes in various forms. We know we're happy when we're at peace. We know we're happy when our conditions are harmonious, whether it's the relationships between ourselves and our family or our friends or others in the community. And when we hear harmonious music, we become happy. It's natural because the universe was created in a harmonious manner. Everything fits together. Everything has a plan and even allows for a limitless number of possibilities to occur within the field of experience. So we are here experiencing lots of things. One of the things that we experience the least is peace. There's various types of peace. We have peace amongst nations, peace on the planet, peace amongst people, peace of mind. And there are other terms that describe peace as well. And peace is dependent upon other conditions existing. For instance, you really can't have peace without harmony unless you're the only person. If you're the only person on the planet, you could be harmonious, but it'll be a monotone. It will have no dimensionality to it. It would be like a musical instrument that only plays one note. So when we think of harmony, we think of what gets along, what blends, what supports on the bottom, or has a foundation, a solid foundation, and what expands upwards. In music, harmony is literally an arrangement of tones that blend together. They harmonize because they vibrate at compatible frequencies. We talked on past shows recently about frequencies and the vibration. And you've heard others talk about that very same thing. The Earth is changing right now. The whole solar system and the galaxy, even the universe, is constantly going through change. And specifically, the Milky Way is going through a vibrational change or a frequency change. And the frequency is raising our consciousness. And it's rising in its own self. And this is intentional. This is for the Earth. This is for all the living creatures on the Earth. And even the things that we feel are not alive are going to demonstrate in a short time that they are very much alive. And what's interesting is that the trees and the flowers and the grass, nature herself, does not really toil, not the way people do. And yet nature always gets it right. Nature is, without man's interference, does a fantastic job of continuing a cycle, a progression. We're too busy to even take notice of this. I mentioned this in the piece that I read on last night's show. So harmony and peace are two aspects of something that we seek, whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, and would bring us to a state of happiness or joy. And I can start making comparisons, because without harmony, you can't have peace, and without harmony, you will not experience joy. Peace is a result of joy, and at the same time, the two coexist within each other, within and without. They exist together, simultaneously, which is another example of harmony. In our pursuit of getting along with others, we may become attracted to another. And there are all kinds of definitions of love. They're a mile long, and yet we know that word, and we use that word, and yet do we really know love? Do we really know what it is? And when it is, and how it is, and who it is? The essence of all these things is harmony, not disharmony, or not discordance, or distortion, but a focus, a coming together. Love between animals is fairly simple. And it's driven by an innate and quite possibly conscious, but most likely just a natural progression of survival. Animals mate because it's inbred in them to survive. And maybe there's an awareness that animals have not been able to express to us yet, that they know that if they do not procreate, that their species will end. And so it's put into them, on some level, to mate, to raise families, and to love those families and take care of those families. Some in the animal kingdom spend their whole existence with their family, living and breathing and eating and sleeping and defending the family, all that together. And there's a tremendous loyalty. There's a tremendous devotion. They wouldn't think of discarding a member of the family. At least not intentionally. Yet, people have an innate ability to do just that, to discard their friends, to discard those that they claim they love. So we do we really understand the meaning of love? Now, what's interesting about the three qualities that I talked about a moment, peace and harmony and joy, ultimately, they all exist in love. There's a great joy in being in love, or being loved, or having love, feeling love, or being love. There's a joy in that, and there's definitely a harmony, because you're going to get along with the object of your love, your affection, your attraction, your desire. And love creates a oneness. Love is a oneness. The only other kind of love there is love of self, and that we know is egotism, and that is the false self. Yet, there's an aspect of loving ourselves that's very important and very crucial and critical to recognizing others and the oneness that we have with others. So loving yourself doesn't necessarily mean moving into the ego, which is the false self, but more so of respecting yourself, honoring yourself, and your relationship to all other things. Again, harmony comes into the picture, and that harmony produces peace. And when there's peace, there's great joy. So those four qualities, there are others, but those are the four primary qualities to love that bring love about. I suppose you can have love without peace, but it will be like riding a roller coaster. And its opposite, hate, will enter into the picture. And you've heard of, that's a love-hate relationship. That's a relationship where people have agreed that they were going to ride a roller coaster of emotion. Somehow, as if being in love requires that they couldn't have a perfect relationship, or they couldn't act outside of fear. Somehow fear has to cast doubts about the love, the source of the love, or the motive for the love. Yet we are all one, and it would be perfectly natural for us to respect that quality in others as well as we would want them to respect that within us. So love is really not a finite quality in our reality. By no means is it finite. It can grow, and it can grow constantly if we nurture it. So we must act. We must do something to affect love. Even moving to the point where you recognize love in another person or a situation or a vocation requires a certain amount of recognition. You have to recognize that person is there. Then we place a value on love, how much we love. We love one thing more than we love another. We say things like, well, I really like blueberry pie, but I love apple pie. And so we show a preference for apple pie. Some women say, well, I really love a man that drives a fancy sports car. So there's an image that woman loves. And it works the same way with men. I'm not by any means singling out women. I'm just using that as an example. So we have love of material objects, and somehow we can associate someone owning a material object and falling in love with that person, it appears that when that material object decays, when it rusts, or when it's involved in a collision and it gets damaged, that the love will end, unless it's replaced with another object. But then does the person really love the does that person love the owner of that object, or do they love the object? Do they love the stigma attached to it? There are those that love money beyond what is reasonable or beyond what is natural. Money is just one expression of a certain type of abundance, and yet it's temporary. In fact, all these things are temporary, except love. How someone looks, the color of their hair, how tall they are, how short they are, how round they are, how thin they are. How lean or tense their musculature is. Or how flabby and overweight. Everybody's got a different preference, and there's nothing wrong with that. Yet, so often we put demands on love as to how it looks, or how it sounds, or how it feels, instead of what it is, because ultimately love is going to be the recognition of what's inside that other person. What's inside that other person is what is in their heart, is what I'm referring to, where discernment lies. We're going to take a short pause for the cause right now, so you can think about this for a moment. You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
storable food. Storable food. HempUSA.org has an inexpensive, nutritionally dense, high-frequency food. Hemp, known around the world, will boost your immune system and increase energy levels. Detoxifies the body and reduces junk food cravings. Burns fat and builds muscle. And is easy to digest, non-allergenic, and gluten-free. Can be made into smoothies, breads, muffins, pancakes, cookies, you name it. The entire planet should make this a staple food in their diet. The seeds will scrape the colon wall. The powder will feed the body vital minerals. And the oil will clean the arterial walls and feed the brain. Try our powder, seeds, and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org. That's 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. Remember, vacuum packaging this food will have at least a 5-year shelf life stored in a cool, dark, dry place. Holidays are coming, and this would make a perfect gift for friends and family. Call today, 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to Idaho-Observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Tarzan Love, Tarzan Love, BBS Radio, Tarzan Love, BBS.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
BBS, BBS Radio, let's go. We love BBS Radio. We love BBS Radio. We love
And we're back with Evident Footprints. We've been talking about love, even Tarzan and the little grays on Mars. I love BBS Radio. This is really a topic that we could go on for hours and hours and not cover every aspect of it. But what I'm trying to do is just point out the basics, that the reason some of us experience love and some of us never do is because we don't really feel love where love is. And that's in the heart. We go into love relationships and we decide what we love and what we hate and what we are sort of lukewarm about from a perspective of this mental matrix that has been created for us. And we keep getting into relationships that fall apart and fall apart and fall apart. Yeah, they go up and down, or forward and backward, because it seems like if, when you start making progress in a certain positive direction, it always we always experience a moving backwards in the outcome of the relationship. They don't always grow. We sort of tolerate things because we feel, well, I made this commitment, I have to stick to it, even though I hate it now. And so you have couples that argue and cheat on each other and do all kinds of nasty things to each other because we're lost. We're filled with fear. And we're filled with sometimes some aspect of ourself that we've really not considered or discerned in terms of where these feelings are coming from. Why are they still there? People get into relationships with the best of intentions, and then they discover that they're making the same mistake they made over and over again. And that's because we think that by doing all the things that we've done in the past, whether we do it consciously or subconsciously, that somehow the right person or the right situation or enough money or the right location might have some effect, some impact on the success. And it may, to an extent. Though if we don't overcome our fear, or if we don't recognize that fear is there, and if we don't deal with it, we don't really have to do anything to fear to cause it to leave us, other than to replace it with something real, because fear is an illusion. And we get so wrapped up in things that we keep forgetting that fear is an illusion. It feels real. It feels real. Some people experience perspiring from various parts of their body. Sweaty palms, you've heard that. When people get fearful, some people's palms sweat. So there are physiological reactions to fear. Or their heart beats rapidly, or their respiration rate increases. Or they feel weak-kneed. Some people get headaches. Some people become very weak physically and then mentally. And ultimately, when they try to analyze what the root of the problem is, they're breaking themselves apart. Analysis is the tearing apart of something, breaking it up into smaller components. And we are whole beings. We are holy beings. We are sacred beings. So we're not doing what is natural or what is real when we're reacting or allowing fear to even exist. And the key is to go again into the heart center, and just feel. And if you haven't tried it yet, it's not my fault. I've been suggesting that, and there are many others that talk about the heart center. They don't always explain it in this detail. But when you feel something good, when you feel loved, you have a happiness inside you. You feel the harmony, you feel the peace, you feel the joy. Where do you feel that? Is it in your little toe, or do you feel it in the heart? And if you're feeling it in the head, and I'm speaking exclusively, I'm not, you know, real love, you're going to feel all over your body. Every aspect of you and your light body, you're going to recognize that you are something more than just a physical being when you're truly in love. You're going to feel a connection with that person that you love. And it's very empowering, because the more that love builds, it spreads. It spreads to other people. Other people see that relationship. Other people become interested in what is the magic, or what are the reasons that two people can be so happy with one another. And it usually happens when they're doing the right things, when they're approaching it from a spiritual perspective, because ultimately we are spiritual beings. We are not these bodies. And we are not our minds, yet we cannot exist in this realm without our minds and without our bodies. So who are we? That asks that question. It begs the question, who are we? Or who am I? Some people fall in love for the purpose of having the other person, use a quote, make them feel complete. And I suppose if we get into love relationships with people and we ask ourselves, what percentage we come to the with to the table. In other words, am I a whole being or am I 50% of a being? Then I ask you, how many of you would wish to have a relationship with somebody who was only 50% there? Most of you would say, well, I want someone that's there 100%. I want their devotion. I want a complete person. I don't want, it's not my intention to create a person or to control a person. Many of us go into love relationships demanding that we are in control and that the other be subservient to us. And so while we proclaim that we choose freedom for ourselves, we deny it in the other. And that's just another form of insanity or ignorance or stupidity. How could you love a person that you control? How could you allow them to be who they are? How could you nurture the relationship in that manner? It's automatically on a path of self-destruction. Now, in the larger context, what impact does this love relationship? Let's imagine for a moment that we have a wholesome love relationship between two beings who are giving their all. They're 100% to the relationship. They are complete individuals in and of themselves. They can exist quite successfully, quite happily being alone. And yet they choose to go into a relationship with another for the purpose of expanding their consciousness and experiencing peace and harmony and joy and love. They become a whole new creature then because they become in touch or they begin to exist being in touch with who they really are. And then everything they do seems to have some kind of magic that causes everything they touch to turn to gold. Every project they tackle is a success. Every problem they solve is a result of their having seen the bigger picture and made that part of their reality. Not based upon illusion, but on something that they have created or co-created. If we could learn to think like that in our personal lives, starting with ourselves and then with those who we would choose to love or to have as friends or associates or neighbors, those in our family, in our extended family, which is everyone else on the planet, we could bring about peace on this earth. And we would automatically catapult ourselves into a higher state of consciousness. And with that would come intelligence and knowledge and wisdom. And a lasting kind of wisdom or a lasting kind of consciousness, not something temporary. And with that understanding comes a deeper understanding of our true nature. And you can't be in love and be in fear at the same time. If you're in fear, you're going to project that fear onto your love relationship. Your love relationship will become as much an illusion as the fear holds. We fear death, which is the ultimate sense of loss, even though we know so little about death. And we're not told the truth about death in organized religion, not at all. Life is a learning process. It's a process of a stream of experiences or a sequence of experiences, one experience following another. And consider this, that as you become of a higher vibration, a higher consciousness, you can experience things in a multidimensional way. We can do that to some extent. Now we can hear and see simultaneously, and we can hear, see, and smell simultaneously, and we can hear, see, smell, and taste simultaneously, and we can hear, see, smell, taste, and feel simultaneously. So why can't we discover what else there is beyond this physical reality? I'm just naming five senses. There's the reality of spiritual sight, or clairaudience, clairvoyance, telepathy, psychometry, which is entering, it's a means through which to enter a higher dimension. Some do it naturally, some are learning to do it, and some will never do it. Yet we have to begin asking ourselves why we're here. And when that answer comes through, and everyone's got a different reason, I'm not saying we're all here for the same purpose, ultimately there's a foundational principle at work, that we are extension of God, we are an extension of the Creator, we are one with the Creator is within us. Yet so few of us are aware of that reality. Instead, accepting the illusions that are presented to us 24/7. An understanding of this will lead you to an understanding of many other things, because the one thing that people lack most in their lives is love. Love in its highest expression is music and light. And when I say music, I don't mean the music that you hear on the radio. It's far beyond our comprehension. We fear giving up possessions when we die. We fear, oh, I have all this expensive artwork, or I painted all these pictures and I'm leaving these pictures. And yet, what is it that we appreciate in art? If it's nothing else, it's beauty. And we have a natural love for beauty. So the beauty lives on even after the painting is destroyed or the statue is broken. The beauty has been put out there into the universe, just like the beauty of a love relationship, the beauty of two people being in love and all the light that that carries out into the world. And I can tell you with the certainty that illusions do not transmit light. They serve another purpose. They may appear to transmit light. Illusions are artificial. In the sense, they can be produced through alchemy, certain aspects of metaphysics used incorrectly or for the wrong purposes. And I say wrong not in a judgmental sense, but in the context of why these possibilities exist. Everything has a dichotomy. And you can choose which one you prefer to have, which one will be part of your experience. But your choices are not who you are. It's what you do with your choices that is going to ultimately define who you are, because that is going to be your experience. The highest thing that any of us can do is to love each other, recognize our true nature, and stop succumbing to illusions, the biggest, the most dangerous to our spiritual progress is that of fear. Now, when you apply this to the world's problems, it works the same way. I read a passage from the Phoenix Journal last night in chapter 4, which stated that killing someone in self-defense is the only type of killing that is honorable or allowable. You have a right to remain alive. You've been given the sovereign gift of free will and life. And no other person has a right to take that away from you. That's what being sovereign is all about. No person has a right to imprison you because you choose not to be dominated or enslaved or mind-controlled. That's exercising and recognizing your sovereignty, and it's an awareness. We don't have to analyze it, because analysis is really another way of expressing paralysis. That which stops us from taking action. If you've ever seen someone who's suffering from any kind of paralytic condition in their physical body, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yet fear creates that same reaction in us if we allow it to, if we give it our permission. And that's one of our biggest mistakes. We've allowed others to make our decisions for us. We've become dependent upon them for meeting our needs. Those of you who are in that condition, I would ask the simple question, if you were the only person on the planet and your desire was to live, who would take care of you? And I suggest from this moment on that you start doing whatever that answer was. Because ultimately you are responsible for your lives. Listen to your heart when you meditate or when you pray. And if you don't meditate or you don't pray, good way to start is just to sit, close your eyes, and be quiet and listen to your heart and see what comes. And with a little bit of practice and a little bit of experience, you'll transcend that fear that's stopping you from doing that now. And you'll begin to hear God's voice, and you'll begin to realize more about your true nature. And you may be able to solve some problem that's plagued you your whole existence on this planet. And you may be in a position to help others after you solve your problem. After all, that's part of what we're here to do. I want to thank you for listening to Evident Footprints tonight. We're out of time. We've got to say goodnight. Tune in tomorrow. Jim Murray will be with us. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, my listening audience, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.